Welcome to another edition of the Horse and Round podcast. I'm your sideline reporter and Bronco host on Denver Sports 760, Andy Lindahl, along with the oracle of all things Broncos from DenverBroncos.com. You know him, you love him. He's Andrew Mason. And we had planned to talk a lot about, and we still will, talk about the 2017 version of the Broncos and not quarterback talk this time. But we had a little topic pop up during one of the radio shows this week. Now, I don't even happen to be hosting the show, but Romy Bean, my partner, had gotten off on the topic of best teams to never win a championship here in town. And of course, she reached out to one Mr. Andrew Mason via Twitter to get his opinion on such things. Now, a lot of people do point Mace first and foremost to that 75 Nuggets team, which frankly, I was a year old, so I don't know how good they were. I'm going to take your word for it. But this is a Bronco podcast, so of course we're going to talk Broncos. And I'm trying my best not to be appalled that you find the 2012 team better than the 2013 team. Please, state for the record your thoughts and try to convince me you haven't been drinking heavily.
Well, there's no denying the 2013 team had an all-time offense. I mean, it was, and it remains, you know, with 606 points scored, the highest scoring team in NFL history, and actually by a decent margin, by 17 points over the 2007 Patriots. But it takes offense and defense. And while the 2013 team, 13-3, went to Super Bowl 48, had an offense for the ages, as we saw at times throughout the season, that defense had its issues, most of them tied to injuries, and then of course things like Von Miller's suspension at the start of the season that weakened the defense at the start of the start of the year. But you recall Champ Bailey missing a good chunk of the season, and then when he returned to the playoffs, really playing on one leg because of a foot problem. You know, Chris Harris Jr. wasn't available by the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl. Von Miller had the ACL, missed the postseason. You know, it was a defense that was put together by duct tape and baling wire at various points, and really broke down and collapsed in the Super Bowl. And because it was a one-sided team with a great offense and a defense that allowed the Broncos to rank 22nd in points allowed, allowing a shade under 25 points per game, that to me is why I look at the 2013 team as a notch below the 2012 team that was second in points scored, fourth in points allowed, that was truly a complete team. In fact, I look at the 2012 team, frankly, Andy, as the best of the Peyton Manning run that just happened to have 10 things go wrong in a precise order in the divisional playoff against Baltimore. And of course, this being football, not baseball, basketball, or hockey, one game, one day where everything goes wrong and it all falls apart, that's the nature of the sport, doesn't mean that the 2012 team wasn't a great team. It just, you know, had a bad day and had things happen to it, like Matt Prater getting a clump of dirt when he was kicking a field goal at the worst possible time. All these things that, if one had gone the other way, would have gone, the Broncos would have won that game, and I think would have gone on to win Super Bowl 47. I look at the 2012 team as a more complete team, a more balanced team, and also Trendon Holliday was very explosive that year, much more explosive than he was in 2013. It was a three-phase team, no glaring weaknesses, and that's why I look at the 2012 Broncos as a better team than the 2013 Broncos, even though the 2013 team had all the offensive records.
See, and that's fine. Look, I'm not saying that the 2012 team was a bad team, because they certainly weren't. They had Von Doom, as they were calling him themselves for a while. Von Miller called him Batman and Robin when he had Elvis Dumervil and Von Miller, and on and on and on. There certainly was a better defense for that 2012 team. Frankly, it was basically made up of that 2011 defense that really paved the way for the Tim Tebow magic to happen. Now, unfortunately, you know, someone brought up to me over Twitter, because we've been talking extensively about this on Twitter. By the way, someone said that they thought 2014 was a better team than the 2015 and 20. I don't agree with that. The 2014 team, I'll just say it didn't have any heart. And, you know, frankly, they all admitted it after the year. And if you're going to talk about special teams, heart has to factor in. You may have had some talent, but they weren't all playing in the same direction, and I think coaching hurt that team as well. Jack,
remember the Patriots game? Remember the punt return? And it looked like no one was really chasing on the punt return. The Patriots returned for a touchdown.
Yep.
That's the kind of play and the kind of game where I think maybe the lack of that little something extra manifested itself.
There were a lot of plays
like that.
Well, let's be honest about it, and I don't want to harp on 2014 because that's not the topic of what we're talking about, but the 2014 team basically gave up after the Rams showed everybody how to beat them. That was kind of the end of the special Peyton Manning, I hate to say it, but the special Peyton Manning that we enjoyed in Denver for that 3.5 years or 2.5 years to that point. He just was really never the same in a Bronco uniform. Now, he was clutch for that team during the 2015 season on the way to the Super Bowl victory, but certainly not the Peyton that we got spoiled watching. And I think that all started when the Rams and Jeff Fisher in particular basically said, here's how you beat Peyton Manning of the Denver Broncos era. So I don't know what your feelings were, but to me, the Ram game is when they got crushed, if everybody remembers, on the road. Peyton, I think, got hurt on the turf there. And honestly, Peyton, it just wasn't the same after that. The rest of the way was a struggle more than it should have been. So
yeah, and C.J. Anderson really had to carry that team down the stretch. I mean, that, if not for C.J. playing at a Pro Bowl level, and in fact actually going to the Pro Bowl because he did so much in the second half of the season, I'm not sure the Broncos managed to go 12-4 and win the division that year. He really carried the team on his back down the stretch that season.
So I'll get back to my point about 2013. Here's the thing. We're talking about teams that didn't win the championship, which means there was certainly a component missing. 2012 was a fun ride. A few things went their way, including some nice Trendon Holiday games, and he tried to pull it off in that Baltimore playoff game as well, as he really gave the team a boost. I just feel like, to me, when you watch 2013, that's a one-of-a-kind offense that will never be repeated again. I don't care what Tom Brady does. And, you know, they may make a run at it this year with some of their additions. I just don't think you're ever going to see that again. Bill Belichick, to me, will never, never take the gloves off or, you know, take the restrictor plate off of Tom Brady and his offense ever again. I think he gave Tom his chance. That's what happened in 2007. It didn't work. They didn't win a Super Bowl. They had a hell of a run in the regular season. You know, they almost went undefeated, but they didn't. And I think Bill Belichick's going to play smarter football from here on out. I don't think we will ever witness what we saw in 2013. And Andrew, I realize, again, I will not offer argument that the defense was not what you were hoping for. They weren't, but nonetheless, they still rode that.
They couldn't be. Well, they couldn't because they were hurt. That was the thing.
Right, but they still rode, and they didn't have Ryan Clady either. Let's not forget that. They still rode this to a 13-3 record. They still managed to beat the Chargers and the Patriots and get to the Super Bowl. Look, I know this. It's only in the Arena Football League that I saw a team that could take some of the down and distances that we watched with this Denver Broncos squad in 2013 and make basically 10 or 15 yards look like it was nothing. You could not cover the combination of Decker, Thomas, Welker, and Julius Thomas. I mean, and did they have a real run game? Not really with No'Shawn, but what No'Shawn was asked to do was incredible. And I just have never seen an offense where it didn't matter how much of a hole you got him in early. They just figured it out. It was a ton of fun to watch. And to me, because they were the most special unit in history as far as the offensive side of the ball goes. Now, I know some of the guys from the 98 team would take exception with that, and we could have a fun argument about that too, but they won a championship, the others didn't, and that's the basis of the discussion. I just think when you take as special a unit as we saw with Peyton Manning and that group, that's why, to me, that was a more fun team to watch, a team that I think was better than what we got in 2012.
But what's interesting, Andy, is the teams with that kind of offensive, that offensive output, they don't win at all. I mean, if you go through NFL history, the 9 highest scoring teams of all time, none of them won a championship.
Including recently, last year, right, with the Falcons?
Yeah, they're tied for 8th all time, 540 points. but they also gave up 406. And we saw in Super Bowl 51 that when that defense had to be on the field a bit too long, that in the fourth quarter, you could just see them as the Patriots had that game tying drive, and then in overtime when the Patriots won the coin toss, I thought game over, because you could see the Falcons on that last series, they were gassed. They were breathing heavily. They had nothing left in the tank. They had been on the field too long, and the Patriots just marched down the field like they weren't even there. But yeah, it's really interesting to see that the nine highest scoring teams in league history, none of them won a Super Bowl. You have to go all the way down to the same of 99. They scored 526 points. But what was interesting, they had, I think, the second or third best scoring defense in the league that year. They only gave up 15 points a game.
Well, see what I...
Yeah, so they had a great defense that went under the radar.
I would say this, though, about the 2012 team, and I'm going to upset some Bronco fans and probably some members of that team. I don't agree with the revisionist history that we all write, that it was a foregone conclusion. Now, do I think the Broncos beat the Patriots if they were able to advance to there? Yeah, probably, because the Patriots were coming here, and it's been a home-and-home series, you know, so to speak. It's been a home-field advantage series anyway, I should say, when it comes to the championship games. And we haven't seen the Broncos have to basically travel to New England. But obviously in the Tim Tebow year when they went there for the playoffs, the Broncos stood no chance. So, yeah, I'm confident.
And the Broncos had a pass rush then, of course, because you mentioned Dumervil working with Von Miller. So they, even though it wasn't what Von and DeMarcus Ware were in 2015, the two of them were capable of doing a lot of the same things that 2015 pass rush could do.
That is fine. That said, I'm sorry, the facts are the facts, and this Broncos pass rush could not get to Joe Flacco when they needed to most late in that game. They could not get to Joe Flacco on the ill-fated play. We can all blame Raheem Moore, and that was a bad break, and he broke a cardinal rule that you don't let a guy get deeper than you do. But the reality is, I also remember Von Miller or Elvis Dumervil being just a couple of steps from Joe Flacco and not able to get there, not able to close the gap, not able to get the job done. And let's be honest about it. That team was built, as you already pointed out, around its pass rush. Raheem Moore was not a key figure as to why they were what they were. It was the two pass rushers that unfortunately failed to get the payoff done and get Flacco to the ground so that they could win that game, because they had a chance and they didn't. And so for that reason, Andrew, I would say it's no – people act like they'd have walked all over the 49ers. I'm sorry. Colin Kaepernick and his ability to run, and the Colin Kaepernick of that time, not of what he's been, but of that time, a hot player that helped get him to the Super Bowl, that could run, that could throw, that was confident, I think he and that offense would have been a bigger handful than, frankly, they get credit for.
Well, and I don't think it would have been a guarantee either, because the other factor that you have to mention is – who was their coach?
Are you talking the Broncos? Well, frankly, both.
Who the 49ers coach was.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'd give it to both. It doesn't matter. Harbaugh gets it over Fox for me. Just period. You can say who was the Broncos coach. I mean, look, coaching is what costs the Broncos. None of us has ever really, and I don't think John Elway, I think John Elway is in this group. None of us ever really loved the decision that when you've got a field goal kicker with his kind of leg power, that you just sit on the ball and take the air out of it.
Yeah, when you have timeouts.
And the Falcons the next day basically go the same length you needed to and get a game-winning field goal. Now, it was in a dome. The conditions would not have been the same. Prater would have been kicking into the same end of the field, the south stands, that he chunked that kick earlier in the game. But the reality is, how you don't say, yeah, let's take a shot with Peyton Manning as your guy. I don't know. And for all the talk of Willis McGahee that I've also heard, let's not forget it was Ronnie Hillman trying to tote the mail as they were down in those games that counted either for that team.
And that's another thing. I mean, there were so many things that had to go wrong just in that game, just to set up Flacco having a chance to beat the Broncos with one play. You had to have multiple injuries at running back over the course of that season that forced Ronnie Hillman to be carrying that football when the Broncos needed tough yards. You had to have Matt Prater, who had you know, a career season that year, catching a clump of dirt earlier in the game on a field goal that he makes, attempt that he makes 95% of the time. You had Champ Bailey, who, you know, he would have the injuries a year later, but that year was still playing at a high level, at a shutdown level, finally looking old. And Joe Flacco beating him early with a couple of first half touchdown passes to Torrey Smith. They were going at him in a way that no one had gone at him. He had these things and other little things, all that had gone one way for the Broncos all year that went another way that day. Not making excuses, but if they played 10 times, I think the Broncos win 9. But that's football.
Yeah, but see, maybe here's the thing though. And again, this is so tough. This goes back to our argument of last week. Why argue against your own team? I love Champ Bailey. He was a great Bronco, and he's going to be a Ring of Famer. But let's be honest about it, Andrew. Wink Martindale, who was the Baltimore, linebackers coach or whatever that day, he was the one we heard later. He was the one that encouraged the offense, go after Champ. Everyone's been afraid of him. He's not the same. He's lost a step. So even though Champ looked different that day, I think it's because nobody wanted to challenge him off reputation, and the Ravens weren't afraid to do so. We don't know that if more teams would have had the same guts that the Ravens showed, that Champ wouldn't have looked that way a little bit earlier. And again, I'll go back to coaching. I'll tell you why I would take – now, John Fox coached the 2013 team too, and it bit him in the Super Bowl the way it bit him in Baltimore. But you know what disappointed me? We talk about the Prater kick. I'll never forget being on the sidelines watching them warm up. Now, it's not my normal routine. My normal routine, at least during 2013, was to go be with you guys and do the pregame show. But for whatever reason, I found myself watching Matt Prater in 2012 warm up on that bitterly cold day against the Ravens, and he was struggling. He was not kicking well into the south stands at all. And a matter of fact, where he was asked to kick that kick right before the half, that kind of led to some Baltimore momentum, that was the exact spot I'd seen him struggle from in warmups, and I questioned why from that spot they had him kick right there when John Fox should have been conservative at the end of the half and loose with it at the end of the game, and instead he flipped the script.
Yep. That's very true.
So, look, they were both great teams. So let me ask you this, Andrew. Is it a disappointment? I don't want to be too strong. It's not a failure. That's definitely too great a term. You got two Super Bowls. You won one with Manning. But is it a disappointment as we look back on history that there really wasn't another trophy in there? Or do you think, I mean, look, you had a quarterback who you didn't know what you were going to get. Do you just say, we're lucky we got another one, and thank him as he heads out the door?
Well, you mentioned it earlier. There was no guarantee of success when Peyton Manning walked in the door in March of 2012. I mean, he'd had the multiple neck surgeries. No one knew whether it was going to work out. And if you go back to October of 2012, when the Broncos are in San Diego on Monday Night Football and they're 2-3 and they're down 24-0, slinking off the field into the locker room at halftime, Andy, I can recall looking on TweetDeck on my computer, and the Wolves, in terms of fans, are circling, and people are starting to say they never should have let go of Tebow.
Ha!
People are pronouncing the Peyton Manning era a failure at that moment. So that tells you how, you know, there was a moment where people didn't believe that the Peyton Manning era was going to be any kind of success, but B, that there was no guarantee that it was going to work out. Remember the Atlanta game week 2 of that year down in the Georgia Dome?
Vividly.
And the replacement refs, you know, John Fox and Jack Del Rio, I think they wanted to go after the refs at one point because they were missing so many calls. But that was the game where Peyton had some early turnovers because he's trying to go down the seam, can't quite get the ball where he wants it to go. Broncos fall into a 3-score hole early. I mean, there were some moments in the first 6 games of that season where you thought, maybe he's never going to get back to where he once was. But then the second half of the game in San Diego happens, And from that point, really, until St. Louis, like you mentioned, in 2014, we got not only vintage Peyton Manning, I think we maybe got the best of Peyton Manning, better than even the best Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. I mean, it was amazing to watch for that two-plus year stretch. But, yeah, there was no guarantee it was going to be successful. So I look back and say, two Super Bowl appearances, one Super Bowl win. Yeah, it would have been nice to have had more, but you can't get greedy. Every player, every coach who's in football will tell you, getting to the Super Bowl, it's hard. It's a grind. It's hard. And that's why so many of these guys will have such admiration for how the Patriots do it and keep going back. You know, so I've got to say that the era is a success. Getting the Super Bowl twice, winning it once in 4 years, it's a success. You know, maybe you wish that there was a little bit more, but can't complain about it at all.
Look, they made Peyton Manning showed up and made this team legitimately relevant on a national stage again, and that was something you were looking for. And I know the Tebow fans out there hate to hear that. The Tebow thing was like the 2007 Rockies, and it was a lot of fun, but it also was inexplicable. And a lot of times things happen, and you looked at each other, and you thought to yourself, I don't know how that happened, but let's hope it just keeps happening. And unfortunately, the Buffalo game, the Patriot game at home, there were hints that this thing couldn't be sustained. People seem to forget that the Chiefs game, I mean, December was an ugly month for that team with Tim Tebow. The Chiefs game they lose is with Kyle Orton at quarterback, probably the sweetest victory, unfortunately, in his career.
Even the Bears game they won
shouldn't have been a win.
Barber went out of bounds, but even that game, you could, that was when they started hitting a lot of good games with a lot of good defensive coaches on the other side. The Bears were coached by Lovie Smith at the time. And it was Lovie Smith, and then the week after that, it was the Patriots and Bill Belichick. The week after that, it was Buffalo, and Dave Wannstedt was running their defense, and then Kansas City, and then Romeo Crennel was running their defense. Once they got to a lot of those really good defensive strategists, that was when it was like bit by bit, all of those defensive geniuses kind of picked that Tebow and picked him apart piece by piece by piece until there was nothing left. And then Dick LeBeau inexplicably didn't borrow from anything the four coaches before him had done and got beat. I don't know what Dick was thinking, but
pride comes before the fall, and unfortunately he fell hard. let me throw this at you because it was interesting. You know what so we got a lot of tweets, as I said, and let's be honest about it. Twitter's for a younger generation. It's not for the diehard fans of the 70s. We got a lot of fans mentioning the 96 team, which, you know, the 96 team, it's an interesting team for me because you don't have Howard Griffith at fullback. It was Aaron Craver at the time. And you've got Michael Dean Perry instead of Keith Traylor. And who was the other guy? Jones? It was James Jones, I think, was the other DT they got from Cleveland.
You don't have Neil Smith.
You don't have Neil Smith. You don't have – for me
– And Rod Smith isn't Rod Smith yet. He's still young and developing. Anthony Miller is still getting the bulk of the reps at receiver.
See, for me, I love that 96 squad, and I know some of the guys told me they thought that was their best team. I think that's just the nostalgia of the winning. To me, Howard Griffith was the difference maker. I mean, Terrell Davis becomes who Terrell Davis Hall of Famer is with Howard Griffith blocking for him, right?
Well, it's funny because having covered the Panthers as well, a lot of guys out there will tell you that when Howard Griffith left the Panthers for the Broncos in free agency, a big part of what allowed the Panthers to break through and go 12-4 and go all the way to the NFC Championship in 96, that when Howard Griffith left, a lot of what made them special went out the door.
Now help me remember too, was Darian Gordon a member of the 96 squad? I don't feel like he was either, and people forget. I mean, Darian Gordon was a special punt returner for this team.
Yeah, Darian Gordon, I think he was free agent class of 2007 as well.
Or, you mean 97?
And Trevor Price was a 97 draft.
Right.
And he was rotating in as a rookie as well.
So, though it was a lot of fun to watch the 96 team, we never won a championship, and I understand why people love that team. I have a tough time. I don't like to argue with players that lived it, but I got a tough time believing that was better than your Super Bowl teams.
And the other thing, and the reason why I will put the 77 team ahead of the 96 team. I mean, the 77 team, people forget what kind of gauntlet the AFC was back in the 70s. I mean, you had to get through Pittsburgh and Oakland to get to the Super Bowl. Oakland's coming off a world championship. Pittsburgh is in the midst of its 4 titles in 6 years run. I mean, it doesn't get much more rigorous, even though you're at home, it doesn't get much more rigorous than that, just getting to the Super Bowl. In the regular season, to go 12-2, you had to play Oakland twice. You split with them. They played Dallas in the end in kind of a throwaway at the end of the season. Baltimore, which was an outstanding team in the mid 70s, came to Denver Thanksgiving weekend. Broncos beat them. The first Air Coryell team in St. Louis came to Denver opening game of the season. Explosive offense. Broncos actually shut them out 7-0, which was really their first kind of statement of intentions in the season. Pittsburgh came to Denver in the regular season. Broncos beat them. It was just, they went down, Broncos went down to a pretty good Houston team late in the year, beat them on the road. It was just, what the 77 team accomplished start to finish was, to me, more impressive than what the 96 team did. I'll put that 77 team, with all respect to the guys of the 96 team, I'll put that 77 team ahead of the 96 team.
See, and I would agree with you. That's why I was saying, I don't know, Twitter is not for those that were season ticket holders, shall we say, of the 77 team, to be real fair. So that's probably why we haven't heard too much about it. Let me throw
it's even a cross-sport argument now. The one that kind of might get some controversy, I got some flack on saying the 09 Rockies, but my argument there is this. For the last 4 months of that season, after they fire Clint Hurdle and hire Jim Tracy, that team was on a 103-win pace.
Yeah.
That was the best team in baseball from June 1 to the end of the season. That was, like, the 07 team was a fluke. The 09 team, that's when Cargo comes up and starts hitting. Tulo's in his prime. Ubaldo's dealing. That was the one that I thought was built on rock, not built on sand. I thought that team could win the World Series, and I thought that team could win for a few years after that. I was wrong, but I thought they were really headed somewhere big. And for a sustained period for 4 months, that's the best the Rockies have ever been.
Well, and see, I'll back you to the hilt on that. I don't care what any fan says. To your point, 07 was fun. 07 was 30 days of magic, and young guys not even knowing what they were doing, and everybody hitting a hot spot at the right. It's one of those fun things in sports that you witness and you can't explain. To your point, the 09 Rockies were the 07 Rockies, like you said, for 4 months. And who knows? Everything you just said as far as expectations probably stay there if you find a way to not blow the Philly series. But you're right. You blow the Philadelphia series inexplicably. And I can remember being in the bowels of Coors Field waiting to go talk to this team as they were headed off to Philly or whatever. You know, maybe they were even going to win the series. I can't remember quite the circumstances. But we go down because the closer's in. I'm forgetting his name for the Rockies, the old Padres closer.
Houston Street
comes in. He was automatic to that point, proving your point even again. A better closer, I think, than the young Manny Corpus. Houston Street was established as a closer, and he falls apart. And frankly, Houston Street's not the same. Houston Street, that Philadelphia playoff series to me is what it was for Peyton Manning against St. Louis in 14. So he's never really the same Houston Street again either. And you're right. Baseball fans may not like it. It may not have carried the same fun. But if you're going to talk about a better team, the 09 Rockies were incredible. You got a no-hitter out of Ubaldo, the first in franchise history, and he started the All-Star game. That tells you the kind of sustained success that team had. This I can remember.
Well, that was 2010.
Okay. So it's a year later.
Because what happened was They lost the series to Philly in 09, but they carried over. They had a very good the first 3 months of 2010. They carried over. So really, it was basically a good kind of once about 180, 190 game stretch. And then the second half of the 2010 season, that was when the fall came, and it was basically a few years before they ever got it back.
So to bring it back to the Broncos, two teams that I think we could talk about, and again, this all started with the conversation, the best champion or the best teams not to win a championship in the town's history. That's why we veered off on some Rockies conversation. Let's be honest, there's some Avs teams, some Nuggets teams we could throw in there. But as a child, now I don't know how good they were, but were they fun to watch? Was it a great season? Did I learn some stuff about football? The 89 Broncos, who ultimately, unfortunately, got slaughtered by the Niners, that great 49er team with Joe Montana and John Taylor and Jerry Rice and Roger Craig and on and on and on and on and on. That 89 team was fun. Bobby Humphrey was their running back, supplemental draft pick. Of course, that's Steve Atwater's rookie year. He and Dennis Smith are the most imposing safety tandem in the league and would stay that way while they were paired together. Bobby Humphrey, to me, and Mel Bratton, I can remember, comes in as the fullback. Bobby Humphrey, I think, with all due respect to Sammy Winder, a guy that's beloved in this town, and you won't meet a nicer guy, but Bobby Humphrey was the first time I got to watch a running back that I can remember consistently breaking long runs for a team and showing, you know, I can remember Bobby and John running that flea flicker because teams had to, you know, cheat up on Bobby when he got the ball a little bit. And so I think the 89 team was fun. I'm not going to put them ahead of any of the teams that we talked about under Peyton Manning or whatever else. But I think that was a team that was a lot of fun to watch. And then there was also the 2005 Broncos, which frankly, I can remember covering that team. Everything just felt easy. You know, every time I can remember they won in Dallas, and I'm like, this is amazing. Short weeks, long weeks, other than the Heat in Miami to start that year, nothing seems to faze this team. It's just unbelievable. They ran through different running backs. You got Ron Dayne chipping in here, and it just everything seemed to work until it didn't.
Yeah, the 05 team, I mean, I'm not going to – it's not one that I can sit here and say – it's one of the five best Broncos teams ever, but the way things were lining up, I think that's one that was a Lombardi that they should have had and they let slip away, because it was a funny year league wide. The Patriots had a lot of injuries that season. You know, they came to Denver really beat up in the divisional round, and the Broncos capitalized. Broncos were very healthy that year, very few injuries at all. I mean, a testament to that. Remember, they brought in all those Cleveland Browns defensive linemen, and Courtney Brown, a guy who could never stay healthy, it seemed like, actually stayed healthy that year. Well, just it, a lot of so things like that broke the Broncos' way. The Chargers, in the midst of a long run they had from 04 to 09 of winning divisions. That year they go nine, they're just a little bit off, and they go 9-7. In the NFC, the Broncos draw the NFC East, and Philadelphia is the defending conference champions, and you think that's going to be a tough game, but the Eagles are down, there's a little bit of chaos, T.O. is chirping, and Broncos beat them pretty handily at what was then Invesco Field. So you had a lot of things that were kind of lining up. If the Broncos had managed to beat Pittsburgh again, another thing that looked like that was lining up in their favor is that Pittsburgh had beaten Indianapolis in the divisional round, bringing the conference championship game to Denver instead of having to go to Indianapolis, which I think most Broncos fans had kind of written off as an L, just because of the struggles in Indianapolis. Of course, it turned out Pittsburgh was a hot team, and I think the Broncos probably underestimated the Steelers a little bit that day coming into Denver. But if the Broncos had won that game, you know, they would have played Seattle, and that Seattle was not exactly a vintage conference champion. I think they probably would have had a very good chance to win that game and have a title. But it was kind of a strange year. Aside from Indianapolis, not a very strong year, but the Broncos just kind of they just basically kind of they stayed healthy, kept their heads down, just kept on churning, kept on churning. I think they never had a multi-game losing streak. They lost the first game, and then I think they won the next six, lost, and I think they won the next five, lost, and then I think they won out the rest of the regular season. They never let problems grow. It's a very well coached team that had great chemistry. You know, no mistake, Jake, as they called him, with Jake, you know, Jake Plummer, kind of playing with it himself. Good coaching staff, but you know, chemistry is a fragile thing because there were a few tweaks in the off season that followed. Gary Kubiak goes on to Houston as the head coach. Jay Cutler gets drafted, and a team that probably should have been just as good, if not better, on paper, was not anywhere near as good the following year, and that started a decline for the next several years.
Yeah, Mike Shanahan coaches Peyton Manning at the Pro Bowl and decides that his quarterback needs to be a different type than Jake Plummer instead of riding with the successful formula and building it off the run game. Yeah, it was incredible, and there was no maybe about it. You talk to the guys that played in 2005, my buddy Jeb Putz here among them, he will tell you that they thought when they saw Pittsburgh take down Indy, they were ready to raise a trophy. They didn't think there was anybody left that can hang with them with Pittsburgh having to come to Denver, and they completely did not prepare the way they should have.
If you have a dropped interception early, I think if you have that pick, it's a different game.
Yeah, you let a team get on a roll and a guy like Ben Roethlisberger feel good about some things. Well, but let's be honest, to be fair also, Andrew, every one of these teams didn't win a championship for a reason. And we all know, you talk about that Philly game, that was incredible, but the Denver defense couldn't get to McNabb. You know, I can remember that. Or was it McNabb or was it Vic at that time when they played Philly? All I know is that that thing was a track meet. And
McNabb, it was McNabb.
That was a fun game to watch if you like scoring and fantasy points. But unfortunately, the Broncos of 05 had to blitz their way to do anything to get pressure. And finally, they've met a team that could hold up against the blitz. And basically, Pittsburgh wasn't afraid to take. The corners kept dropping, and Pittsburgh wasn't afraid to take the free 7 to 10 yards they were giving them.
Yep, and that was it. And 34-17, and
nothing's the same.
It was another 8 years before the Broncos got that close again.
Well, I'll tell you what, this has been fun, Andrew, discussing it. I think maybe we'll have to get one in before we get to training camp next week. I got some thoughts on Garrett Bowles. I would recommend if anybody, I think Channel 4 will put it online to set up the basis of next week's discussion before we get into some camp days. And I would imagine with the camp starting, you and I may throw a couple up there. Go watch Romy Beans. Now I'm plugging my partner, but she did a piece with Garrett Bowles and the Denver Outlaws. And again, what's got me so excited, I was lukewarm to the pick of Garrett Bowles, and you know that. I think I kind of made my feelings clear on this podcast. To watch him move in a sport that I know very well and have played for 25 years, the game of lacrosse, and to watch him in this video keep up with a very fast, quick, and change of direction guy in Eric Law, just know that the little things you may be seeing on video, even though they're goofing around in shorts, that kid's athleticism and some of the things I've heard about his attitude and his study skills have me very excited to see what Garrett Bowles can ultimately be. And I'm now feeling bad for my lukewarm response to his drafting, because some of the things I'm hearing, if they show up next week when we get to training camp, I think John Elway picked the best of the bunch. There weren't a lot of great tackles, but he maybe, just maybe, found the guy that works for today's NFL with what he did with Garrett Bowles, that's for sure.
Well, the thing is, the feet are quick, and that's pretty, and I'm sure you've seen that in his lacrosse film. That's apparent when he's out there on the practice field. I think the rest of it technically, I think, is going to take some time, but if he does well and he can use that quickness as an asset against these quick, fast edge rushers that he has to go against, then he has a chance to be more than just a good tackle. he actually has a chance to change the template of tackles in this league, and we actually may see tackles get lighter and quicker to counter these fast edge rushers. That's something we'll definitely get into more on the next podcast, because I think his development's going to be interesting, just because it's not just about him or the Broncos. This could be about the future of the tackle position.
Totally agree, because as we know, the NFL's stuck trying to change a lot of tight ends into tackles, and I don't know, it's just working with varying degrees. This guy, as you said, he looks to have some tight ends' feet with the nastiness of Ronald Leary, shall we say. So, and we'll talk about it. I heard a few things about Mr. Bowles, and all I'll just say is I've heard high marks about the offseason. Let's hope we see it once we get to camp and they start hitting. He's Andrew Mason. You hear him always on DenverBroncos.com. Read his work. Andrew, any articles that people should be on the lookout for next week before the next podcast drops?
Well, we're still counting down 15 players to watch in the 15 days before camp. We started last week, and actually among those guys to watch at camp, we're going to get to them this weekend. It will be Garrett Bowles and his competition at left tackle, Tyson Briley. There'll be a couple of guys that I'll be writing about this weekend among the guys to watch. And of course, I'm sure you can figure out that number two and number one among the players to watch are going to be the quarterbacks. I mean, who else could they be, right?
Yeah, you really have no choice at this point, seeing as how we dedicated the entire offseason to it. By the way, you know what? I'm, for whatever reason, I'm kind of excited to see what Devontae Booker does in this Mike McCoy offense. The guy that brings the pain the way that he does, I think he quietly had a good offseason. I'll just put it that way. I'm excited to see what the second-year guy does. I don't know. His blocking was in trouble last year, but he also the whole group was a bit of a mess. I'm excited to see what this kid does in a different system, because a running, you talk about key players, a running game is going to be key to go with the block. I mean, this could be a complete offense if they find a couple guys who the light goes on for it. But anyway, we'll talk more about that next week. I'm Andy Lindahl. Of course, he's the man, Andrew Mason. We'll talk to you next week. More of the Horsing Around podcast to come.